Welcome once again to The Bonfire, where we talk about UFC and mixed martial arts. I am your host, Mike Bond, and I'm going to be honest with you folks right off the bat here. I am tired. It has been a journey. If you're watching the video version of this, you can see I'm in my hotel room here in Edmonton. I think less than 72 hours ago, I was in Abu Dhabi covering UFC 308. What a wild night that was. I made a brief pit stop at home, saw the family, did some laundry, got a decent sleep, and then it was back on a plane right here to Edmonton, where UFC Fight Night 246 goes down right down the street. Rogers Place, a big night for Canadian MMA, in my opinion. But before we get into all that, I just have to say, Ilya Topuria, man, is the real deal. Holy cow. I've been to a lot of Max Holloway fights, never seen anyone do that to him, obviously. Ilya Topuria said he would do it. He did it, knocked him out. Incredible stuff, man. That was a star-making performance, unbelievable title defense, and the UFC has something special on its hands with this guy, no question. They also have something special with Khamzat Chimaev, unreal finish of Robert Whittaker. Guy is a beast. I expect him to fight for the middleweight title in his next fight. Will it be the next middleweight title fight overall? I don't know. A lot going on behind the scenes in that division right now. A lot of moving parts, and I'll just say that much. UFC going to have to make a decision here soon on what they want to do and pull the trigger on a certain direction, and then we'll see how the chips fall from there with Dricus du Plessis and the rest of the weight class. So interesting times, and Chimaev makes it even more interesting with the way he won that fight against Whittaker. But as far as today's show, we will be joined for the first time on this program by ESPN analyst UFC welterweight Michael Chiesa. We're going to play a little game of true or false for the first time on this show, a new segment, you could say, I guess. Maybe I'll make it reoccurring. Fun stuff, some fun questions, and we'll also chat a little bit about his UFC 310 fight against Max Griffin on December 7th in Las Vegas. Then after that, one of the best journalists in the game will join me for the first time, Aaron Bronstetter, my fellow Canadian, Sportsnet's own World MMA Awards nominated, and just overall a great dude, one of the best people in the business. So we'll chat a little bit about UFC Edmonton, the state of Canadian MMA, UFC 308, and then some other stuff going on in the business. So please remember to like, subscribe, follow, comment, all that good stuff. The support of last week's show with Dustin Poirier and Farah Hanoun from Abu Dhabi prior to UFC 308 meant a lot. So let's keep that rolling if we can and enjoy the show. And here back at the Bonfire, joining me for the very first time, it is a fellow Mike, Michael Chiesa, man. You are fighting UFC 310, working as an ESPN desk analyst for UFC Edmonton, where I am. I want to do a little bit of fun thing with you today, since you're on the show for the first time. I know we'll talk about your fight a little bit, but I want to throw some true or false questions your way. We can talk a little bit about them, since you're also an analyst as well. So let's start with this. Coming off UFC 308 last weekend, true or false, Ilya Topuria is the fighter of the year over Alex Pereira.
False.
Why?
I just look at the times that Alex stepped up on short notice. I think that that deserves some merit. For him to step up on short notice and deliver big, and he got his wins at the two biggest events of the year. So I think that, I lean mainly towards him stepping up to fight Jiří Procházka on short notice and getting the job done and kind of saving the day. I know that Topuria, those two wins are huge. Max Holloway and Volkanovski. I mean, it's a tough argument to me. I think it's just more, it's very much an opinionated thing than it is a factual thing. It's just my opinion leans towards Alex Pereira.
Yeah, I think it's very fair. I was so like ironclad on him after UFC 307, but man, like I think that was the one way Topuria could have won to actually make it interesting, like a real conversation. I think if he had won like on points, or if it was like a more of an underwhelming finish, I don't think we're having this argument. But man, like no. He definitely made a statement. It's a tough one.
I think they should split it. I think that can there be like a co-fighter of the year? Like it's just both of these guys. It's just so hard. To see one guy get second place, it's like, oh, man, they both have just had a tremendous run this year. So, but I just lean towards Alex.
Yeah, I know. It's like you're almost like tearing one guy down by giving the other person the argument. But these are both like incredible all-time years too. So it's like when people are having this discussion, don't tear one guy down to bring the other one up. They're awesome. You're just like deciding levels of awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, true or false, Khamzat Chimaev is the best middleweight in the world right now.
False. I just think it's obviously Dricus is the champ. Sean Strickland's damn good. I mean, it's just there's no other way around it. I mean, obviously, I don't necessarily agree with everything he says and writes on his Twitter and things like that, but like, dude, he's good. And that's a very, very hard matchup for Khamzat. I mean, styles make fights. Sean is very big. He's very hard to take down. He's very composed. I just don't think that Khamzat could overwhelm him. I think Khamzat could beat Dricus du Plessis. Dricus just has this weird way of fighting. I think that Dricus is always going to be underrated because of the way he fights. I don't think anybody's really going to be like, oh, no, Dricus is the best guy. It's like people are always going to kind of naysay Dricus because of the sloppiness to his style. But it's that part of his game that's what makes him so hard to deal with. But I think that right now, I think Sean Strickland is the best middleweight.
Very interesting. So do you think Strickland and Chimaev is a more competitive fight than Chimaev and Dricus?
I do. I do. I mean, I look – the problem with Dricus is while his kind of the – I guess the better way I could say it is the untextbook way he fights. He doesn't fight by the textbook. There's a lot of things he does wrong by the textbook. But it's like I look at some of his fights where, like, he went for lateral drops and he pulled mount. You know, like, you can't make mistakes when it comes to grounding yourself against a guy like Khamzat Chimaev. Like, you have to do everything in your power to stay on your feet. Like, look at the squeeze on the guy. Like, he broke Whitaker's teeth out. He freaking popped blood vessels in Kevin Holland's eyes. Like, he's like, you have to avoid the ground game at all costs. I just think that Sean, that would be a very, very hard fight for Khamzat Chimaev, would be Sean Strickland.
Yeah, they also have the training history too, right? So like Sean's felt that whatever it is, he's a little more familiar with it. So maybe it's not as shocking. You mentioned like the jaw. So I'm curious, people are like now trying to discredit Chimaev's win a little bit, being like, well, Rob came in with this old injury. Like it seems like he just got him in the right place. Do you put any credence into that? Or do you think, you know, it's Rob's fault? He got in there and it's a clean win.
No, that's like people saying like, oh, if Max Holloway wouldn't have landed that spinning kick to Justin Gaethje's nose, Gaethje would have won. Shut the hell up. Like, dude, you won. That's on Robert Whittaker. You know, if that's a pre-existing injury, that's on him. It hasn't held him back from fighting Yoel Romero for 10 rounds or whatever it happened. It didn't hold him back from beating Ikram Alaskarov. It didn't hold him back from becoming one of the greatest middleweights of all time. I don't know when in the midst of his run as a UFC fighter did this pre-existing injury happen, but I can tell you that Khamzat Chimaev won and got his hand raised. I don't think there's an asterisk next to the win on Tapology or his Wikipedia page. It's a clean win in my book. And I love Robert Whittaker, yeah. So don't get me wrong. Robbo is my guy. I love him to death. I think he's amazing. But I just don't think that, like, that's not something you can say. Like, if you step – it's like with TJ and Aljamain Sterling. Like, TJ's the one that stepped in there with a toasted shoulder. That's not on Aljamain Sterling. You know, so pre-existing injuries are not something to discredit a win for somebody.
Facts, agree on all counts. Okay, true or false as we move on to UFC Edmonton. Flyweight, main and co-main here, obviously Brandon Moreno versus Amir Albazi, and then Rose Namajunas versus Aaron Blanchfield. True or false, both of the winners of these fights in the main and co-main, their next fights will be for the title. It doesn't mean they'll get the next title shots, but their next fights will be for the title, the winners of these main and co-mains.
I just keep throwing around the F word a lot. I'm going to say false. I think that Brandon Royval looked really good against Tatsuro Taira. So, I mean, you're really going to have to, wow. If you're Amir Albazi or Moreno, you're going to have to win big. You got to win big, especially if you're going to leapfrog him. Plus we got Kai Asakura fighting Pantoja. That, you know, Kai Asakura could come in and really throw a wrench and everything and win the title. And then who knows what's going to happen. If Rose wins, I can say this. Of all four of those fighters, the one I can confidently say the most, if Rose Namajunas wins, she'll be in a title fight next. I can confidently say that. Even though she lost to Fiorro in Paris in 2023, I could see Rose, if she gets the win, I could see her getting the title fight. But other than that, I can't confidently say if any of the other three, and that's if they should. But you know how it is. There's a recency bias in a lot of situations. We're like, oh, well, Moreno wowed the crowd lots, you know, more recently than Royval did. Yeah, either way, I just think that I'm going to have to stick with the F word on this one. I'm going to stick with false.
Yeah, no, I think that's pretty on point. Rose, I think, too, like, she's probably in a good position to wait. She's been very active, like, these past few months. This will be her third fight in, like, 8 or 9 months. So she's probably earned the right to maybe wait and see what happens if Manon and Valentina fight next.
Absolutely. I think that that's the right thing to do. Plus, you don't know if they're going to do Grasso. You know, they're 1-1-1. You know, you don't know what they're going to do there. It's just a lot of uncertainty in those two weight classes. But nonetheless, especially flyweight men. Flyweight, it's just so funny to me, Mike, how like at one point in time, they cut this division from the UFC. And now if you talk, it's in present day, it is to me one of the most exciting, if not the most exciting division in the UFC right now. The fights are amazing. The caliber of technique and skill that these guys have in the top five is there's every guy is so good in every facet of mixed martial arts. It's so good to be in the business of being in the flyweight business.
Yeah, I mean, to just think that they could stick to flyweights, you know, one from Mexico, one from, I believe, Iraq, Amir Albazi's from here in Canada, and have like a, you know, nice crowd and big arena and stuff like that shows where this division has come a long way.
Absolutely.
Yep. Okay, so you mentioned that Kai Asakura-Pantoja fight. That's one of three title fights remaining this year. The other two are John Jones versus Stipe Miocic and then Bilal Muhammad versus Shavkat Rakhmonov. We have had an insane amount of title changes this year already. Two of the last three UFC title fights this year, whatever combination it may be, will lead to title changes, true or false?
I mean, I could, Jones is going to win. Pantoja is going to win. The only coin toss is Bilal and Shavkat. That's the only one. But I'm not – Danny Rubenstein's going to shoot me for saying this. I'm not convinced that Shavkat wins this fight. I just – Bilal's too good. Like, look at the last six fights he's had. His strength of schedule is – of all the champions right now, I will go out on a limb and say Bilal Muhammad's last six fights has way more depth than any of the current champions right now. Like you just Damian Maya when he was ranked, Wonder Boy when he was in the top eight, Luke when he was top five, took Sean Brady's O away, fought Gilbert Burns in five rounds on short notice when Burns was top five, and then he beat Leon Edwards. Like, look at those six fights. I know people are calling Shavkat the uncrowned champ, but if you look at the strength of schedule, I don't think it's gonna be that easy. So, would that mean I'm saying false, right?
Yeah, I think it would be. Yeah, if you think Bilal's going to retain and John's going to retain. So, yeah, I mean, the Shavkat thing is interesting. It's given me a little bit of like Ilya Topuria vibes, right? He's getting the title shot off like one top ranked win, but that's all he's got. He's got the one Ruboy win. Jeff Neal's good too. Obviously, we saw what he did.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
It's not like a proven top three guy he hasn't beat yet. So he's got the shot, and I guess we'll see if he's on that level or not. But your gut tells you maybe not.
It's just hard for me to pick against Bilal Muhammad. It just is, especially. Like I said, those six fights, man, that's deep. That's depth. Like, it's almost like who could beat him? You know, the only thing that Shavkat's got going for him is maybe age. Bilal's like in my age bracket, 35, 36 years old. Shavkat's significantly younger. Mm-hmm. Maybe that favors him a little bit. But, I mean, there's nothing that has shown that Bilal's slowing down in any way, shape, or form. So we'll see. It's going to be a fun fight. That's all I know. It's going to be that's the fight that needs to happen. And I'm excited that on my birthday, I get to go fight. And then I get to sit back and watch that one.
Yep. You are on that card. It's been a streak of falses here. I think you're going to say true to this one. True or false on December 7th, Michael Chiesa will be the first person to submit Max Griffin.
True. Damn it. True words haven't been spoken. I'm going to get out there. I'm going to snatch that neck and cash a check. But listen, dude, Max is a super tough guy. Total stud. We're always very cordial in passing. I think he's a great guy. Jim West, Anthony Hernandez, all those guys, just a great group of dudes and girls. Aspen Ladd's great as well. So I'm excited. Not many people really get pumped up to like, oh, for my birthday, I'm going to get locked in an octagon in a cage and some guy that's going to try to separate me from consciousness. Like, happy birthday to me, you know? I'm a sick fuck. I'm excited.
Yeah. I mean, are you impressed with something particularly about Max's ground game, or do you just think he hasn't been in a matchup where someone has presented the submission threat you offer?
Well, I think I'm a different, I present a different set of challenges, I think, than anybody in the UFC. I think it's just with my build, my strength, my style. I'm a very, very hard guy to prepare for. There's really nothing I do that's conventional. So I know that's something I have going for me. With Max, the thing I give him the most credit for is how competitive he is. He is never out of a fight. Like, look at his fight with Michael Morales. People say Michael Morales is the uncrowned king at 170 pounds. for as long as he can stay at 170 pounds because he's freaking huge. But Max is extremely competitive. He's extremely powerful. He's got Fluffy Hernandez in his camp, which means there's certain things about my game I'm going to adjust just because, like, there's things Fluffy can emulate that I do. Not everything, but something. So there's a few adjustments that I'm going to have to make to just kind of throw a curveball Max's way. But I know I'm in for a tough fight. I think that Max is grossly underrated, and I'm excited to compete against him. May the best man win. We'll twist one up afterwards. It'll be a good time.
No doubt. And okay, last one here. Hoping for another true. At some point in 2025, you will do commentary for some sort of UFC card under their banner, a UFC event, Dana White Contender Series, Road to UFC, something in that vein. You will do cage side commentary in 2025. True or false?
True. 100%. I feel like it's coming, you know, and for me, I'm just staying patient. I know my time will come and I'm excited for it, man. This is all, like, my life revolves around this sport. I don't have kids. I don't have anything else going on. I eat, sleep, and breathe mixed martial arts, dude. So I just know that in due time, I'll get what I deserve. And I think it's going to feel really good, you know, and, I'm pumped. It's just fun. Like, it's like, I'm in camp. I get to go to Edmonton and work a desk show and I get a lineup training out there. And it's like, it's, I don't know, everything about where my life is at right now. I don't think I've ever been this happy. I think that's good. So, well, I know that's good, but yeah, man, I'm excited. Yeah. When that day comes, I just got to make sure to control my excitement because when I get too excited, I don't speak very well. So I just know I just got to, when that time comes, keep a cool head and enjoy the moment for sure.
For sure, man. No, it's going to be well-deserved. You're one of the best at what you do and obviously still an incredible fighter as well and doing that part of it. So I appreciate you joining me here for the first time on the Bonfire and hopefully the first of many, man. Appreciate it. We'll take a quick break here and I'll be back with Aaron Bronstetter from TSN and we'll run over this UFC Edmonton a little bit more. Thank you, Mike.
Cool. Sounds good.
We are back with, as I said in the intro, one of the nicest people in the game, and I think he proved it, Aaron. I really crapped the bed on this one. I sent him to the wrong hotel here in Edmonton, but Aaron, being the nice guy you are, you drove over here and still made this happen. I appreciate you being here, man.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you really want to add some extra details to this, I was at a hotel, which is the host hotel, which is like 3 minutes from here. I drove to the one that you sent me, which is in West Edmonton near my hotel. Got there, and then I had to journey back here.
I know. That was,
made it work.
Yeah. As I said off the intro, it's like, I'm tired, folks. I think that was the first sentence. And yeah, I think that really proved it. That was a very careless error by me.
Yeah, if we were in Toronto and I was near my house, I wouldn't have turned around.
No, it's fair.
I got nowhere to be here in Edmonton.
Exactly. And it's probably just like a straight flat shot, right? On the roads, you get to see the sights. How have you enjoyed
seen
the roads?
Twice.
Yeah, exactly. How was it out there?
That's not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, Edmonton, I actually like driving in the city. It's very scenic. It's got a lot of like... forestry, I guess, like a lot, and it's fall, so it looks nice. Still, it's cold outside, but I mean, otherwise, I've always enjoyed Edmonton. This is the third UFC event I've been to in Edmonton. I also do Unified, which is often at like the River Cree Resort down here. So I like visiting this city. It's quite nice.
Yeah, it's interesting flying on the plane. It's just like opposite terrain, but kind of the same as the Middle East as flying out there.
Right,
I can say desert. It's just the Maryland's. But yeah, man, obviously we're here for UFC Edmonton. You were doing some interviews at the host hotel today, right? How was it?
Yeah, it was good. Not a whole lot of media there on the Tuesday. So we got to talk to Mike Malott, Moreno, Albazi, Ayman Zahabi, Charles Jourdain. So a lot of interviews today, but they're all in good spirits. And it's just, again, this is the first fight night that we've had in Canada in like 5+ years.
Wow. What was the last one?
Last one was Gaethje Cerrone in Vancouver.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy to think back. Yeah.
So that's the last time that we've had like a fight night card. So it's good to be back here for a fight night. And the last Edmonton card was Holloway versus Edgar, UFC 240.
Wow.
So that's been a minute.
Yeah. And obviously you work for Sportsnet. Needs no introduction, but I intro'd you off the top too. But everyone who's watching this, I imagine, knows you quite well, the great work you do. But it's like, what, almost a year now with Sportsnet?
Yeah, almost a year.
How do you think this first year with the TV rights changing over for TSN, you switched jobs and stuff, how's it been?
Yeah, it's been great. It's been more of a focus on broadcasting, whereas with TSN, a lot of it was reporting. For this, they really want to focus on the work that's being done on the road, interviews and things like that, hits on Sportsnet Central, and focusing a lot on that side of things. So that's kind of different for me. You know, if you followed my work previously, I was my own camera guy. I was my own lighting guy, just like what we're doing here, right? Yeah, so I had to set everything up, and then it's hard to focus on an interview when you're worried about, is this recording? You're probably worried right now. You at least have a red light. I was recording on an iPhone. So, and I would like to, I always like to use the front camera because it was a better quality camera. So a lot of it was a crapshoot as to whether or not it's recording. So that's always in the back of my head when I'm trying to focus on doing an interview. Now I've got a camera operator with us. We've got my producer, Dan, with us. So it's just a lot easier for me to focus on the nuts and bolts of what I want to do, which is just interviewing the fighters, getting to know them better, you know, piquing my curiosity with questions that we don't already know the answer to. That's really kind of what my mantra is when I talk to these athletes. It's like, what don't I know? What do I want to find out from speaking to these fighters? So it's been really great to be able to just focus on that and not have to worry about all the other things that go into it. And that's really been a massive, I guess, element of growth in my career so far. Mm-hmm.
That's great. Do you have like a most traumatizing memory of an interview you forgot on your phone? I'll give you mine just so it makes you feel less bad, because I just had flashbacks when I was in Saudi Arabia for Francis Ngannou's PFL fight. It was after he got knocked out by Anthony Joshua. After the press conference, he gave me a one-on-one in the back room and I didn't press turn the camera on because it was literally like 6:30 in the morning because that fight took so long to happen. I think it finally happened like 4 a.m. local time. And that's when Francis said, like, I didn't even feel like I was awake when I went in there, and that was the first time he said it, and I didn't press the button.
Well, I will be honest and just say that, like, there have been a good number of those moments, and I put them in the rearview mirror and forget all about them. Because if I focus on it for too long, it'll drive me crazy.
I know. It does for all of us.
I just try to just move beyond it, and it's an afterthought. Like, there are fighters that I've interviewed before that I forget that I've interviewed them, and I'll interview them again and try to remember if I've met them in person before, because there was a time where we were doing a lot of those virtual interviews as well. And I guess, like, a Brandon Royval, for example, signed on right, like, kind of at the beginning of the pandemic. And I had interviewed him so many times that when I actually met him for the first time, I was like, it feels like we know each other, but we haven't met before. It's kind of interesting, that dynamic, and trying to remember, you know, whether or not you've spoken to people. Just we do this week in and week out, that it gets to a point where you just have to keep looking forward all the time.
It's so true. Yeah. You, like, you want to take so much pride in the work you do in this business too, but you also have to have a very short memory. Like, the stories you wrote yesterday, I mean, me, I couldn't even say how many thousands of stories I probably wrote at MMA Junkie in 13 years. So
yeah. And the sport's kind of like that, right? Because you look at what Topuria did last week.
Yeah. It's a reflection of the whole thing.
Yeah. And he's like, now everybody's like, oh, he's the fighter of the year for sure. And when Pereira won against Roundtree, I thought, oh, he's the fighter of the year for sure. Yeah. It's just like, whatever's happening week to week. And if Albazi has like a great moment against Moreno and knocks him out, it's like, oh, title shot for him. And then Royval's forgotten, and he just had two great performances against, he already has beaten Moreno, and he had that great performance against Tyra. So it's like the sport moves at such a rapid clip that you like want to try to keep up and want to try to remember everything that happens, but so much happens all the time that you almost have to, you'll drive yourself crazy if you keep looking back all the time.
Yeah. Who is your fighter of the year?
Today it's Ilia Topuria, right? Like, it's hard. Like, Pereira's had a great year.
He has.
But you have to look at the quality of competition.
Yeah.
Like, he beat 2 pound-for-pound guys and finished both of them. Neither of them had been finished at featherweight before with strikes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what he's done this year is amazing. And you can give it to the quantity of what Pereira's done, where you look at him taking these short notice fights and him showing up each and every time and really, you know, doing things for the UFC really to help them out of a bind if they have a booking situation. Like, there are a lot of different factors that go into it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at the quality of competition, 2 pound-for-pound guys, like, there's a big difference between knocking out Max Holloway and Alexander Volkanovski and knocking out Khalil Roundtree, knocking out Jiří, who's coming off of a not great performance against Alexander Rakic, and who's Pereira's other win this year? Jamal Hill. And Jamal Hill's coming off a bad injury, right?
Yeah. Like, no, you can put it all in context. I mean, you can question the Volk knockout for Topuria, say it was a quick turnaround.
But how do you question the Holloway?
Yeah, I mean, you could say, like, the cut back down to 145, but I saw
him. The cut looked fine.
Yeah, it did. I saw him the night before. He looked a bit gaunt, but they all do, so it wasn't, like, anything surprising. And he always looks pretty rough, but on the scale, he was fine. But, I mean, again, you can nitpick anything. But, yeah, like, I wrote in my UFC 307's takeaways call, Alex Pereira's fighter of the year case is ironclad. That's the word I used in the headline. And then I had to write my one yesterday or Sunday, whenever it was at this point. And you're like, okay, maybe it's Ilia Topuria. And I said at the end of that one, I was like, we're prisoners of the moment right now. We have 2 months until we actually have to give these things out for real. So, like, we can't say it'll be the recency bias right then, but I understand people arguing right now, today.
Mm-hmm. And you look at, like, Diego Lopez also has had a great year and has performed very well.
What if Charles Bilal Johnson destroys Shavkat and finishes
Right. Him? I mean, yeah, that's a great point, right? Like, if that happens, you see him going to England and beating Leon Edwards, and then he beats this guy who's what is he, 19-0?
Yeah, 18-0. Yeah,
18-0, and they're all finishes.
Yep.
Like, and he beats that guy.
It'd be crazy.
It'd be crazy. But I still think Ilya, the quality of competition, when you look at like the legendary status of, I think those are the two of the all-time great featherweights, yep, still performing well. I think that it's very difficult to give it to anybody but Ilya.
It is. I think that was the one result where it made this like the hardest argument to have, just because like if he had won it like a late TKO,
even a submission,
decision, I think it would have been swayed more in Pereira's favor. But that was like his literal picture perfect way to win. It was crazy being there. That was a wild end to
that
fight. And
if Max had beaten Topuria, you can make a case he would have been the fighter of the year with the Gaethje win and the Topuria win, right? Like,
it depends, I guess, what you value too. Like, if it's straight up fighter, like if you're just looking at the in cage, that's it. But I do think where Pereira's, you know, element comes in is all these other factors, like circumstance and, like you said, doing the UFC solids and stuff. So, yeah, it's competitive. And when I talked to Michael Chiesa in the previous segment, he made the case for a co-fighter of the year award, which I'm like, it's kind of the cop-out way to go, right? But it's hard because it's turned into such a thing, especially like on the Twitter community, where it's like belittling one side to make the argument. Both these guys made incredible cases this year. We're just trying to distinct levels of greatness here.
I think I had posted, I think, you know, Ilya Topuria, I didn't say like definitively he's the fighter of the year, but I said, you know, I don't know what the wording I used was, but it was along the lines of like certainly a candidate for fighter of the year. And then people were like, well, what about Pereira, blah blah, blah. And I was like, they were like, you know, I mentioned the level of competition. They're like, well, Pereira couldn't have done that. And it's like, yeah, that's true. Yeah. Like, he couldn't have beaten that level of competition at light heavyweight because it doesn't exist
now. Yeah. There's no, like, active, you know, former champions that he hasn't beat yet or someone with that big legacy. All those guys.
Well, he beat,
you know,
two former, active former
Yeah, I know, champions. But I'm saying besides those, but, like, those guys didn't really get title defenses. Yeah. Like, they don't have the stature of a Volkanovski or you can only do so much with what you have.
He'd have to beat John Jones, basically.
Pretty much, yeah. Like, yeah, exactly. So, interesting times. I mean, it's all the debate, too. We're having another interesting one as we try to give out our knockout of the month at MMA Junkie, and I'm seeing the votes are split between Topuria over Holloway, which I thought was the easier choice, but Char Bullitt is getting half the results too. And it's like, well, if you're just saying the style of the knockout, maybe it's Char because it was more unique, all that stuff, but you can't even compare it to the weight of what Ilya Topuria did. To me, that's a layup.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because what Char Bullitt's done hasn't been done before. Like, we haven't seen a double spinning back fist knockout.
It was crazy.
Which makes it so spectacular, right? So I would probably give it to Char Bullitt if we're looking just strictly at knockout of the month from like a highlight standpoint.
Yeah.
It's the better highlight.
Yeah. No, I try to use the three S's when I give my words, like stakes, style, significance.
Okay.
I think those are kind of like the three things that I weigh on.
If that's
on
your
it.
Criteria, then I understand.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's to each their own. It doesn't ultimately matter. It's a completely opinion-based thing.
Because next month we'll start and then we'll forget about it altogether.
Exactly. There you go. So yeah, you talked to all those guys today on the card. I think I saw Mike Malott on my plane as well. That's a big fight for him. Any like biggest takeaway from whomever you spoke with, from the headliners to anyone down?
I wouldn't say I took a lot away, but I actually had a really, like, Mike and I are pretty close because he's done Sportsnet with us before. And we were actually kind of going back and forth a little bit because I was saying, like, we were talking about how his loss to Magny, he really needs to take a look. Like, he goes, I was fully prepared for that. I was, you know, I know I did the best that I could have in terms of preparing for that fight. And, like, I just didn't think there was a way I could lose. And, you know, and so what I said to him was, like, you know, you put in the best preparation for that fight, but you still, you know, lost that fight, right? Like, you still, something happened in that fight, and then you can take that away. Like, having been a coach previously, do you enjoy the fact that you can kind of learn how you can turn being great into being even greater? Like, if you feel like you did everything you could have to prepare for that fight, you lost, something happens in that fight where you can now analyze that and figure out how you can prepare even better for the next one. And he was like, no, I don't really like that. Like, I don't want to have to pick myself apart and, like, find. And I was like, but doesn't, like, the challenge of that, like, and learning how to make those modifications, like, isn't some, like, being, having been a coach before, isn't that something that, like, is exciting for you? And he was like, yeah, like, that part of it is, like, getting to dive in and, like, figure it all out. But he's like, having to really look at myself deeply as a fighter and as a person, and knowing that I fell short in that situation is painful. Like, it's, so it was kind of a really, I wouldn't say it was like a contentious conversation, but it was a pretty deep conversation about the mentality of the fighter under those circumstances. And it was kind of cool to learn that. And also learning that Amir Albazi's heart rate was at 239 beats per minute. Like, he had to get heart surgery.
Yeah.
his heartbeat was at 239 beats per minute, and now it's at 40 beats per minute. So 200 less beats per minute for his heart after
was that
surgery.
In relation to the neck injury?
No,
that
was the different
thing.
Had?
Right.
He had the neck thing after that. Okay. He could have gotten paralyzed if he would have fought. Like, he's gone through a lot of stuff going into this fight with Moreno, and like, I've always thought Albazi's been very overlooked in this division. Like, I don't think people realize quite how good he is.
Yeah.
And I saw Eddie Cha, and Eddie was like, this guy is like, all he cares about is fighting. Like, he trains, and then he goes back to his house, and he watches fights, and he like, that's all he cares about.
Yeah, he's just obsessed. I'm really curious about this fight, because this obviously wasn't the originally announced main event for the card. And I had heard originally that Brandon Moreno wasn't going to fight maybe till first quarter next year. I know there's talk of a Mexico City event, so like, I was expecting him back then. So when they announced this fight, I thought this was the right fight and what they were going to do in the division. But you wonder about the timeline, and especially for Amir going through all that stuff too. So a lot of questions around both these guys, I think.
They originally announced Blanchfield versus Rose's main event. You know, it's funny. I was talking to a bunch of people today really about a thought that I had the other day. If you look at this Edmonton card and you compare it to the Toronto card, this card, like the only difference in terms of the makeup of the card is that there are championships on the line. But if you look at the caliber
of the
fights,
same characters.
Yeah, like if you look at the caliber of fights, you got 2 5-round fights at the top. If you look at Myra Bueno Silva versus Pennington or Rose versus Blanchfield, like what's the higher level of competition? Like disrespect to
all
them.
All due respect, yeah.
But like Rose versus Blanchfield is like a pretty elite fight. And then you look at DDP and Strickland's a great fight, but so is Albazi and Moreno. Moreno's a former champion. Like this is a championship level flyweight fight. And the flyweight division is stacked right now, super exciting, and like continues to deliver the goods. You look at like Tyra versus Royval. And then you have like Derek Lewis on the card, and this is the first fight night he's been on that he hasn't headlined in like 4 years.
Wow.
You've just got a lot. Like this card might actually be better than the Toronto card if you just ignore the fact that there were championships on the line. If you look at it just like strictly from a matchup standpoint.
Well, let's not ignore the elephant in the room in that case then. It's been a rough year for the Canadian MMA.
Yeah.
All the way from the UFC to Dana White's Contender Series and stuff.
Except for Jasmine and Eamon. Like Jasmine and Eamon have had good years.
Yeah, they have.
The Contender Series was, wow, that was a,
yeah, that was, what, they go 0-7?
0-7. One of the fighters was like minus 1,000
yeah.
in the first minute.
There was a few like, real rough ones there. Yeah. And yeah, obviously, what, did they go winless in Toronto as well? They was spectacular.
The men did. The women won.
Yes. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. Is this just... MMA is peaks and valleys. It's the way it always goes. You know, you are on a high, this country's amazing, then they can't win and all that stuff. Do you think it's just a valley at this point, just a rough slump? We get some nice results and no one's talking about this anymore?
You could say that, but at the same time, like we haven't had, since Rory McDonald left the UFC, we really haven't had a Canadian rise into the top 10 of any division. I guess Felicia Spencer, you could say, but that division had like 6 fighters. Like we just haven't seen a lot of Canadians really break through. And I think the pandemic had a lot to do with it. Like the
reason no one can get fights
dried up. Yeah. And a lot of the fighters, like you look at Pat Pitlick and Imperato that were on Contender Series, like there were a lot of fighters that are kind of that age now that didn't get a chance because they just had nowhere to fight. You know, a lot of the fighters took risks. Like Jasmine fought in CFFC, I believe it was. You had some Canadians go over, like Johan Linus, and they were able to kind of stand out and get contracts with the UFC. But it was hard for Canadians to even travel and to get to Vegas. So I feel like we kind of like lost a generation of Canadians that could have made some noise. And now we have to wait and see for some of these prospects like Mo Adou, who fought on Contender Series. Like people don't realize he never fought amateur and he's been fighting pro for less than 2 years. Like this guy was like, was running through everybody. He was like 5-0 on the regional scene, beating good opponents. And then, you know, he hits a roadblock and that's normal. Like he's 24 years old. He can still be very good. But, you know, at the same time, a lot of the fighters on the Contender Series were older and like, they like Pat Pitlick and Imperato aren't going to get to the UFC now. Like it's unfortunate, but like that's probably the case for them. And they worked so hard, and it's been like their life's work as they get to the UFC, and like they lose that opportunity.
Yeah, because they lost a big window there. Yeah, I mean it's definitely, if you just look at the results, a little rough right now. But yeah, I think that underneath layer is a little tricky too. So we'll see what happens. You know, maybe this inspires the next generation. This event back on Canadian soil. You know, Dana always loves to say that. A notable event too, I guess, from the rule set side, right? Are we going to see many 12-6 elbows or some knees in the different positions? What do you think?
Someone might break one out.
Yeah. Did you ask anyone about that
today?
Yeah,
I asked a couple of the fighters.
What
they said that they, you know, Charles Jourdain said that it's funny, I got two kind of different answers. Charles Jourdain said that the like 12-6 elbow, the good thing about it is like if somebody's clinching you or trying to take you down, you can open up a cut. Like you can open up a pretty bad cut. And then Eamon Zahavi was like, you know, it's not really a very useful tool. If you try to use it, you'll just get taken down. Right. So it's kind of like a different mentality, right? Like if you're trying to defend a takedown, like Charles Jourdain's like damage, and Ayman Zahabi is like keep the fight on the feet, like, you know, try to like get out of the bad position as opposed to like trying to create damage. So it's like a different mentality because Charles is like a really, you know, apt striker. Like that's kind of what his bread and butter is. And Ayman, I think, is kind of more of a jack of all trades, right? Yeah. So it's interesting to hear them talk about that. You know, one thing that Ayman was really happy about is the grounded opponent rule because he just thinks that there's going to be less stalling.
Yeah, I'm curious to really see how that unfolds. And I guess a better thing to ask, like after the fights, like, did you even, if they get into those positions, did it click into your mind? Yeah. Or are you just so like trained into the ground to do one certain thing? So yeah, it's going to be interesting. And I think it's been passed for Vegas and New York. So yeah, This is hopefully the norm now.
Yeah, and they raised a good point also. Ayman said that, you know, I asked, like, if people are playing the hand game, what's going to stop people from just playing the knee game? You put your knee down, you block your face. He goes, if you play the knee game, you're just going to get taken down into bad positions. Like, it's not the same. It's like a table. Like, the structural integrity of a table is if you've got one hand or two hands down and two legs down, it's harder to tip over a table. But if you've got a table with, like, half of a leg missing, you know, it's very easy to tip that table over. So that's kind of what a fighter that's grounded on one knee is more like. It's a lot, they don't have the same structural integrity.
Mm-hmm. We won't hear from Charles Jourdain at Media Day. How did he look for his first cut to bantamweight?
Looks great.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, he went to the UFC PI and they said, like, you're probably the smallest featherweight on the roster. And
which is so weird because he's obviously like tall. How tall
is he?
Like,
he's 5'9".
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's pretty tall for a feather, like average featherweight size, mm-hmm. probably. He'll be very tall for bantamweight, but he's also not very built. And he said basically, like, in order for him to get to the size of the average UFC featherweight, he would have had to take a year off and put weight on to have like the walk around weight of like the like average featherweight. So they did tests on him. They said, like, you're just optimal for bantamweight. And he says it's been an easy cut for him and hasn't been difficult.
Interesting. Yeah, that'll be curious to see him on Friday. But yeah, that's good signs all around then. Okay, we'll wrap with this question I asked Michael Chiesa, the same question. Odds, you think the main and the co-main, do you think the winners, they will get title shots in their next fights? I don't know if it'll be the next title shot in their division, but their next fights, do you think winners here get title shots?
I think that if Rose wins, she will. I'm not sure about Blanchfield. Yeah. I think it depends on how Blanchfield wins. Like, if Blanchfield dominates Rose and takes her down and like does what she did to Molly McCann, like, yeah. You know, I think it depends. I think with Rose, regardless of how she wins, if she gets a decision, like, she'll probably be next. But, you know, we also have to see, like, does Manon Fiore win, right? Like, but a Rose Valentina fight, like, that's probably the biggest fight you can make in that division name-wise.
I think so, yeah.
And then for Moreno Albazi, I don't think so, because I think Royval's kind of got the upper hand.
Especially if Moreno wins.
Yeah, if Albazi wins, I could see it. Like, if Albazi especially has a really good performance because he's a fresh opponent.
And Pantoja defends.
He
defends, and yeah.
Albazi that fight's wins. Exciting. I like that Asakura fight.
Yeah, that's going to be really interesting. I mean, the fourth fighter, I believe, to get a title shot in his UFC debut. So yeah, that was funny when Dana got asked about it at the press conference. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, like, is it because the division refs? No, it's because he's a badass. And I think that's true, but he's never made flyweight, right? 126?
Yeah, he's been a 35er for Ryan. So it'll be very interesting to see you know, if he can make 125, like you said, not 26, but for 125 first time out. And he's a pretty sizable bantamweight too. Like, he's not like a small guy for the division because they have a flyweight division in Ryzen.
Mm-hmm. Did you see Derek Lewis at all today?
I said hello to him. Yeah, he's kicking around. He seems like he's in good spirits as always. So
yeah, was that? Do you know? Has he been here for a while? Because he posted.
Yeah, so he was at the hockey game on Friday.
Yeah, I was wondering. I was like, oh, he's been there a little early.
Yeah. So he got here. Yeah, and did.
Needs to acclimate to that same time zone.
I mean, there is altitude here. People don't really talk about the altitude here in Edmonton. It's not what is it? Crazy. It's like 2,200 feet. It's okay. It's not nothing.
Yeah, sure. That's why I'm breathing a little heavy. I don't know. That's not it.
Yeah. I've gone to Denver, Utah, and now here since July. So
yeah,
I'm not feeling it quite as much. I've never really felt the elevation here in Edmonton, but you know, I'm also not in the cage for 15 minutes, and that's probably where your lungs will start to work a little bit harder.
For sure, man. Awesome. Well, I appreciate you joining, Aaron. This has been a good time. Hopefully the first of many. You kind of carried the show today while I struggle to stay awake. It's been a long trip. So hopefully now some sleep, but I want to get this episode of the show for you guys. Thank you so much, Aaron, and we'll be right back to wrap it up. Thank you so much to Michael and Aaron for their time. Great insight there. Great times as always right here at the Bonfire. We will be back next week with an episode from my home base after 3 weeks essentially straight on the road. I'll get to spend 1 week at home prior to going back to New York for the monster that is UFC 309. So looking forward to getting one in next week from home. I'll talk to you all then.